Neon Genesis Evangelion is one of the most influential anime series ever made. Absolutely check it out. I'm Father Roderick, I'm a priest and I'm a geek, and this is my show, Story Secrets, about the secrets of the stories that you like. I still remember the first time that someone told me about Neon Genesis Evangelion. It was actually on TikTok. I'd made a series about religious themes in the movie The Batman. And in the comments, someone told me, if you like that kind of stuff, check out Neon Genesis Evangelion. It's a Japanese anime and it's filled to the brim with religious imagery. You should watch it. And my first reaction was, I don't think so. I'm really not into anime. Isn't anime for kids or teenagers? I associate it with Pokemon and with brightly colored monsters or giant robots fighting each other or fighting brightly colored monsters. And I kind of have always discarded the genre. How wrong was I? And Neon Genesis Evangelion actually opened this entire world of anime to me. So I found it on Netflix, which gives it a huge global audience. This show is actually quite old. It's from 1995. I think it first aired in Japan in 1997. And it's only now available to a worldwide audience. And that is why a lot of people are now discovering it, including me.
Our future depends on defeating the angels.
Special Agency NERF?
My father works there, doesn't he?
That's right. And do you know what it is your father does?
Standard weaponry is useless against the angels.
Is there something I'm supposed to do at NERF?
We'll activate Unit 1.
A face? Is that a robot?
The ultimate man-made multi-purpose decisive combat weapon. The artificial human, Evangelion. Shinji Ikari.
Yes?
You will be its pilot.
Huh?
Do this. Shinji, tell me, why did you come all the way here?
Man fears the darkness, and so he scrapes away at its edges with fire.
Shinji, you idiot!
Ikari, are you really sure about all of this?
So I started to watch the first episode. It's a long series. It's 25 episodes. Each episode is about 25 minutes long. And the first episode was about giant robots fighting each other. I was like, you see? Classic anime. Why bother? But then when I continued watching the episode, I got more and more intrigued because indeed there were a ton of religious symbols and biblical themes that were used to illustrate what was happening to the characters in the story. And that was, to me, the most interesting thing. It was obviously not a religious series, not at all. But the use of those symbols, especially, I'm a theologian, I'm a biblical scholar, so when I see those symbols, I immediately think of, like, huh, how does that, the meaning of this symbol or this theme, relate to the story that is being told? And there were so many parallels there that I was hooked, and I continued to watch, and I was commenting on TikTok almost live every week on the things that, the kind of the links that I made between the images, the religious stuff, and the story itself. And the more I studied it, the more I was like, wow, this is absolutely one of the most amazing series in general that I've ever seen. And I'm still puzzling. I just finished watching the entire run of the series, 25 episodes. There are a number of movies that have been made afterwards that evolve the story, sometimes even reinterpret it a little bit. But I've watched these 25 episodes now for the first time, and I say that on purpose because this is a series that I need to watch several times. And the more you watch it, the more you will start to interpret it and kind of fill in the gaps. The story is not very clear in the beginning, but over time, you get more and more immersed in it. And then with the knowledge you get towards the end, you do want to go back and rewatch it, and then it puts everything in a different perspective. That all by itself is already, I think, a major reason to check this out. I don't know many series that do that. Maybe the, the most obvious one is Star Wars, where the more you learn about what's truly going on with the Force and the Emperor, the more you want to go back and rewatch it, and you're like, oh, it was already there, but I just didn't notice it. About the religious imagery, that of course was the first thing that kind of got me hooked, but it's not the only thing. There is also a, I think, very profound psychological element to the story. It's very introspective. It's also in part based on Hideaki Anno's own experiences. Hideaki Anno is the director and the writer of the series. And when he first started to make Neon Genesis Evangelion, he had just come out of a very, very deep depression or a depressive state that lasted for years. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had had a lot of therapy, because later on in the story, it's almost as if it's like an anime remake of a therapeutic process, which I think makes it very visceral, very personal, and also in a way universal, because the things that Hideaki struggled with to a certain degree are questions, are issues that we all struggle with, and that's another point where I really connected with this series. But I believe that these are not two different interpretations. It's not about, you know, what is the right way to interpret it. I think this is all kind of part of the narrative, and it's deliberately left open so that you add your own interpretation to it. And this is also what I reply to people that tell me, religious imagery. You know that the maker of the series has said that they just used Christian imagery because it looked cool, right? It was exotic to the Japanese audience at the time, but none of the creators were Christian, so there is no religious meaning. And I would say, well, actually, two things. First of all, that was actually Kazuya Tsurumaki who said that, who is he's the co-director, and he's more about the visual. So obviously he was commenting on the visual aspect of those biblical and religious symbols that they used. But he's not the creator, he's not the writer. Hideaki Anno is much more restrained when he's asked about that. He said, yes, of course, I'm not a Christian, but I used those symbols and those themes on purpose, because I wasn't a Christian, it allowed me to freely associate those symbols. But what he doesn't say is, oh, it's just for, you know, visual effect. And I believe the more I study this series, the more I'm convinced that there's definitely a rhyme and reason to the use of these religious symbols. And I read another interview, and I haven't been able to retrace the exact quote of someone who worked on the series, who said, yeah, in the beginning, we were a bit puzzled by all this religious imagery that Hideaki Anno told us to use. But over time, we started to read up on it, and it started to make sense, and we started to integrate it in a different way. So that shows me that in the course of the production, they actually started to get better and better in figuring out, you know, which religious symbols would be pertinent to the story. And that is what was my quest to figure out, you know, what is just fluff, maybe just coincidental that they used a certain name or concept, and what is really meant to give us an idea of what is going on with the characters, what the ultimate stake or what the stakes are of the story, why we should watch this story. And I believe that one of the reasons that I believe it's so important to watch this and so worth your while is that this series, more than almost anything else I've seen on TV or in the movies, is touching upon the most profound questions of our existence. Why are we here? Who am I? Why do I feel how I feel? Is there another way to look at the world? Can I reframe my perception? How do I deal with trauma? How does that relate to the way I look at God, the way I regard religion? There are actually several different perspectives on religion woven into the story. And all that is taking place in this post-apocalyptic world with giant robots. I think it's genius. So I'm not going to give you any spoilers in case you haven't seen this, but I do want to give you a general outline of the story, just to give you an idea what you can expect. I want to give you some tips on how to watch this, because it's not easy. So what is this story about? It takes place in literally a post-apocalyptic world. There has been this major disaster, a huge explosion in the Antarctic region in the year 2000, which has destroyed most of humanity. There are some cities left, and for instance, Tokyo is completely rebuilt. It's now called Tokyo 3. The previous two Tokyos have been completely eliminated. And this city is built to withstand the worst threats. And there are actually, after that explosion, still a lot of threats to mankind. The most important one is these giant robots called angels that are attacking Tokyo time and again and seem to be almost invincible. There are some lesser threats as well. There is a huge issue with global warming. The explosion has caused massive meltdown of the polar regions. And so basically the world lives in this perpetual summer, which is also expressed in audio form because you constantly hear crickets like throughout the series. And the way they visualize it is also by making the air tremble a little bit. So the series feels like, oh my gosh, it's so suffocatingly hot. But the city of Tokyo 3 is constructed in such a way that the skyscrapers can also move down. They can go the opposite way. And whenever there is a threat or danger, they can disappear underground. And there's this massive underground space where everybody can be safe. And whenever there is a threat by these giant angels that are attacking, the people of Tokyo and also several other countries have created these massive robots called Evas. And these Evas have to be piloted by children, by teenagers. It doesn't really explain why, but it's a given that only teenagers around the age of 13, 14 are able to connect in a kind of psychic way with these robots. And so whatever movements they make, these big robots make, but then like times 100. Very similar to, for instance, Pacific Rim, if you know that movie series. It's a classic idea in Japanese anime. But here, the story really goes much deeper because we discover, and I'm not going to tell you how and what's truly going on, but we discover that there is a very peculiar bond between the pilots and the Evas. And once you hear what it is, you're like, wow. Oh my gosh, this is definitely setting this series apart from so many other stories in the genre. So these angels attack. The funny thing is, the angels are very different from one another, which in one of my TikToks I explain by if this refers to the way that Christian tradition looks at angels. We tend to imagine angels as being just like these, you know, wings and nice, genderless beings, very benevolent. But in fact, if you look at the description of angels in various places in the Bible, each angel is terrifying if you try to imagine it. And plus, every angel is totally distinct from other angels. There is not one angel that is the same. And so I found it really extraordinary that in this series they visualize that by creating these different threats. Some aren't even robots. some of these angels are like these interdimensional beings, and it's like, how do you fight something that has no substance? And so the story let us meet a number of these teenage pilots, and we see their interaction because they all live in Tokyo. In fact, a few of these pilots actually live together in an apartment with an official who works for these governmental institutions. I won't go into detail, it's very complicated. But anyway, she's kind of like the substitute mother for these kids. And then there is a lot of tension because, and this is another thing that I really like about Neon Genesis Evangelion, everyone we meet is broken and has trauma and has trouble relating to other people. And at first, you think, it's like, this is so weird. Why is there so much strife? Why is there so much competition between these pilots? And why? Where are the normal people? But then you have to realize, of course, this is after a global trauma of this big destruction, the threat that maybe something like that will happen in the future. So there's this constant fear. And then we discover that the traumas that all these characters struggle with have to do with parts of their past that we haven't heard about yet. And so the more we progress, the more we discover what has been going on in their lives and how their behavior towards one another, but even the way they look at themselves, stems from all this unresolved trauma. And the series then, after all these different attacks, ends with a big culmination of this battle. And again, I won't spoil it what happens, but the last two episodes are very different from what you expect. Not necessarily bad, although a lot of people at the time, when they first watched the series, were like, this is ridiculous. Why all of a sudden do we get this change in genre? This looks like something completely separate from what came before. Give us a real ending. What was going on? But I believe that these two last episodes actually form the crux of the whole story. Because this is not just about an external battle. The whole battle between mankind and the angels, this whole opposition almost between heaven and earth, is a metaphor for this internal struggle, for this internal battle that the characters will have to fight, often with themselves or with their past or with other people. And in a way, the experiences they acquire during the fight, during the battle, ultimately helps them to resolve their inner battle, their inner struggle. It's very deep. I was super impressed by these last two episodes. And I may be in a minority because I know that a lot of, if you are a fan and you've seen the whole series, maybe you'd think, like, what? It's awful. The ending is terrible. And many people warned me, don't watch it. It's so terrible. Watch the movies instead, because they have created a number of movies that will oftentimes do like a retelling of the narrative. Sometimes they tell the story a little bit differently. And we see much more what was going on broader than just what happened to the characters and what happened in this internal struggle. But I believe that even without the movies, I think this was super impressive. I was even emotional towards the end, because a lot of the questions in these last two episodes are questions that I've been asking myself. Some of the traumatic events that have such an impact on the heroes of the story are relatable. And I too personally have been having to deal with trauma, with self-doubt, with, you know, who am I? Why am I here? And what I believe is maybe unintentional, but still the genius of this entire series, is that it juxtaposes this whole personal adventure of discovery, this quest. Who am I? Why am I here? What should I do? Why do I do the things that I do? It juxtaposes it to these religious questions. And I believe it's because the two are related. Religion is not just about concepts, about stuff you have to believe, let alone, you know, about scientific things that you can prove. Religion is very much there to help us find our way in life. It's like a guide that can help us to discover ourselves and to discover our true vocation and meaning. And that is what is constantly on the mind of all these characters in Neon Genesis Evangelion. Almost everything has meaning. There is not a single shot, I believe, that was just because it looked cool. No, I can tell, even from the perspective of just analysis, structural analysis. I studied media, movie analysis in Rome for 2 years. If you look at this series, you can tell that everything has a reason. And Hideaki Anno is not telling us what it means. And rightfully so, because that's why it's art. We should be the ones who ultimately determine the interpretation. And that is not because, you know, it's just an opinion and therefore it's wrong and we need to figure out what the author wanted to say. No, I believe, and this is also what I say to the people that are critical of my kind of religious efforts to understand the religious symbolism, I think it adds to another layer of interpretation. It's like if you have a recipe, you can follow it to the letter. But if you're a cook, you take that as a basis and then you just start adding some herbs or stuff. Or you make it in a certain way. Music, same thing. You can just follow the notes, but then it's not music. So a musician adds his or own feelings, interpretation to it, and it enriches the original material. The original content. And that, I think, is something that Hideaki Anno deliberately wanted us to do. And that is, I think, why this series is so long-lasting and still going strong after decades.
Proceed with the countdown.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Boom! Spoiler alert.
It's time for part two of my story secret show about Neon Genesis Evangelion. And now I can go in depth and talk spoilers because I assume that most of you that are still listening or still watching have already seen the series. So I feel a little bit more at ease, sharing some more detailed thoughts. So as I said, I have now finally watched the first 25 episodes of the original television series, and I am eager to start watching the animated movies that came afterwards. And some of them are on Netflix and others are on Amazon Prime. I still don't know exactly what to expect with those movies, but I'm already so on board that I need to check them out anyway. But let me share with you some thoughts about the experience of watching the 25 episode series for the first time. What I first thought was a weakness of the series is that it was so complicated. There was just so much going on, and it seemed to presuppose so much knowledge that at times I was just struggling, and I had to rewatch entire episodes to figure out, you know, What is Sally? What is Nerve? Where does this come from? And sometimes it was only when I rewatched the episode, sometimes twice, I was like, oh, now I see. This is this and that is that. But what I thought was a weakness in storytelling, actually, I think, is one of the strengths of the series. It doesn't hold your hand. You have to really put in the effort to follow what's going on and to figure it out. And that is rare, because nowadays a lot of the TV that we watch is super simplified and there's so much exposition, so that even people who really weren't paying attention for the first half of the series can still more or less understand what's going on. This series is much more hardcore. It's like, okay, it's your job to follow what's going on here. And in a way, I think it's akin to what Star Wars originally did. Whereas, you know, A New Hope started in the middle of a story and it plunged you into the action. And it's only much later on that you discovered what came before, you know, with the prequels and everything. And what it does is it immediately puts you on the edge of your seat. It doesn't spend too much time trying to spoon feed you all that information. And it takes its time to reveal it. And there is fun in the revelation of all this other knowledge. And sometimes it's also through the characters. Some of the characters themselves are unaware of what's truly going on. And you discover, or first of all, you think that you understand it. And then, like them, afterwards, you think, oh, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. And I think that even the series as such still doesn't explain everything. And so I'm looking forward to looking at the movies to see if they can add even more layers of interpretation, because I assume that, at least in Hideaki Anno's mind, he knew the story that he was going to tell. So that gives me an extra reason to continue my quest for understanding. The other thing that I mentioned before is what makes this series so strong is all the hidden symbolism. For instance, the angels that attack, every angel has a name. And some of these names are from the Hebrew texts of the Bible. And a lot of other names are taken from Jewish mythology. Let's put it that way. It's a very broad concept, but from various sources. And sometimes it's just a name, and then when you look up the, like, what it originally meant in Jewish tradition, you're like, yeah, that's where they just probably took that name just because it sounded cool. But I've been wrong so many times. I'm currently working on a video about the 16th episode, and there's this Angel of the Night. Maybe it's already up on TikTok. And at first, I was like, okay, Angel of the Night, huh, maybe that refers to the direct sea, you know, this kind of like almost like a different dimension that gobbles up Shinji's Eva and is like a metaphor for depression. But then I dug a bit deeper. I was like, okay, so, but how exactly is this angel described in that Jewish mythology? And then I came upon another meaning of the angel, or another aspect of that angel, that had to do with presenting to God unborn children, basically. And then the angel would ask God, okay, is this person going to be rich or poor, successful or not successful? There was only one question that was not asked, and that is, will this kid be good or bad? Or evil? And the reason that this angel doesn't want to bring that up, that question, is that that's part of free will. Every child is gifted the gift of free will, and so you decide whether you're going to be good or bad. And that, when I read that, I was like, but this is exactly what's going on with Shinji. That's the whole storyline of Shinji. He, for many episodes, he feels he's the victim of what other people have done to him, how he's not loved enough, not appreciated. The only value that he accepts for himself is being a pilot and doing his job, basically. But that's still external validation. And once that fails, there's nothing left. And there's only depression. And it's in this 16th episode that Shinji is confronted with that one question. The only question that the angel doesn't ask God, but asks the human being, Shinji in this case, is, do you want to be good or do you want to be evil? What is the choice that you make? It's up to you. Nobody tells you who you should be. You can choose, or you have to choose. And that's the way out of this dark sea and this pool of death. And I was surprised in the final two episodes A lot of these questions return, which you could wonder, well, haven't we dealt with this before? Because there are a lot of elements of this internal struggle in the last two episodes that are already mentioned in the 16th episode. But I think it's actually natural, because a lot of these questions, you don't solve them once and for all in your life. These are questions that keep returning. And so you may ask yourself when you're 16 years old, like, who do I want to be? Or you may struggle with your upbringing or what people did to you. And sometimes those traumas will come back later on and you'll have to face them again. Or maybe you weren't aware of what was truly going on in your life. And it's only when you got older that you started to discover, like, oh, wait a minute, I do seem to attach way too much value on what other people think of me instead of defining myself, who I want to be, or reframing the situation, looking differently at the people around me. You have much more power than you actually think you have. And that is what I love about Shinji's evolution, is how he turns from this insecure teenager, very frustrated, very locked up in himself, constantly trying to run away, either literally by running away or by closing himself off with his Walkman and shutting himself off the world. That's also an escape from reality. But how he evolves from that state to the Shinji that we see in the final episode, who says, no, I don't want to be alone. I don't want to shut myself off. I choose to live. And once he makes that decision, that's the final final revelation to Shinji, but it's also the solution to this internal battle, of which I think the battle with the angels is just a metaphor. And that is why you get that weird scene, that once he makes that deliberate decision, now I want to live, he's got the will to live, and that sets him apart from some of these angels. He makes that decision, and then you get that weird scene where everybody is applauding him. But it is, in fact, his biggest victory. The victory of Shinji is not in defeating these angels. The victory is in defeating his inner demons. The voices in his head that always told him, you are not good enough. And you have to perform, you have to be successful. And this is not just Shinji's itinerary. This is also Asuka's journey. Asuka and Shinji, even though they have very different demeanor and different behavior, Shinji very shy, Asuka is very, out there, very confrontational, but they're very much alike. They have very similar traumas. She has, of course, lost her mother. And even before her mother killed herself, she had already basically abandoned her daughter. And the worst thing is that when she's psychologically sick and she's in this psychic ward, she literally replaces her daughter with a doll. And so in Asuka's journey in the story, she is constantly fighting that, not by shutting herself off. Well, in a way she does that, but her plan is to attack first and to dominate, to show everyone that she doesn't need anyone, because she has learned as a child that if you rely on others, if you depend on others, you will get hurt, because people will abandon you, literally, even forever. Her mother abandoned her by killing herself. And so it's this reaction to this deep, deep feeling of loneliness that makes her put up these walls of Jericho that she even mentions. And so the question is, are those walls coming down? And I think ultimately they will come down. And so it's beautiful to see how much the story, and in the beginning, you have no idea that it will get that profound towards the end, that will get so personal and have that whole psychological dimension. But I love it that in the end, it all comes together and you start to understand that this is not just a series about robots. The symbolism is not just because it looked cool and so the rest is superficial. That's kind of the consequence if you say, well, it's all superficial. It's all to set it apart from other rivaling robot series. I think you severely underestimate the genius of the writers, of the creators. And even to a certain extent, you also disregard, I think, these decades that people have been working on trying to understand the depths of this series. You basically say to them, oh, it's just all, you make it up yourself. It's like some people on TikTok tell me, you're seeing things that are not there, invalidating basically my interpretation. And I'm thinking, well, no, actually, I've given it quite a bit of thought. And I know my stuff. I know my religious symbolism. And there are way too many parallels here for this to be a coincidence. It may very well be that the overall, like, reach or deeper meaning of the symbols or the religious themes that were used in the series, that it escaped the original authors, that they didn't realize how much it fit, but they knew enough to choose these symbols, like the big cross with Lilith on it, you know, the whole idea of the spear of Longinus, but then also this oozing orange fluid that, you know, is also nurturing and protecting the pilots inside the Evas. All that is so obviously mirroring the gift of the crucifixion, where it's not just a tragic murder of an innocent man, but it's a deliberate gift. Again, Jesus is not the victim. Jesus himself chooses to go to Jerusalem, knowing very well that it would kill him, but also by transforming it into a gift of his love. And so symbolized by the water and the blood that streams from his side once it's pierced by the spear of Longinus. So you see that there are even theological parallels between the Christian imagery and the whole, you know, the crux of the story of Neon Genesis Evangelion. It's all about not being a victim, but using your free will, your ability to give yourself to others, to open up, to accept suffering. That's another, I think, amazing lesson that Shinji learns in the final two episodes, is that, yeah, sometimes life hurts. Sometimes you will suffer. And instead of running away or shielding yourself from it, like Shinji does and Asuka does, instead you can also accept it and look beyond it and look at your own life with the agency that you've been given to turn it into something that is good for you and good for others. And so there's a lot of healing that takes place. And the healing doesn't mean that the suffering disappears, but it is your healing in the sense that you know how to handle it, you know how to give it its place without being completely overwhelmed and blocked and paralyzed by it. And I think that in the Gospels and in the Bible, this is very much the whole idea is that God created a world that was at one point broken. That was not God's intention to create a world where people would suffer. And if you look at the earliest stories of Genesis with Adam and Eve, it's not by accident that these names also emerge in this story. But originally, the world was made good, and it's us, using our free will, that have destroyed that world or at least broken it. And so the whole Bible is full of stories of people suffering. So you could say, hey, I blame that on God. But then you put yourself in the position of a martyr, you know, a victim. Like, oh, God is against me. The world is against me. I'm nothing. I am against myself. And I believe that the gospel gives an alternative to this. And it's, well, but you are called to make the world a better place. You are called to accept this suffering, to take up your cross, follow Jesus, in giving yourself regardless. And it's that is what gives true freedom. That is what ultimately becomes the seed of new life. And so you can see the whole concept of seeds, this is going to be probably expanded upon in the movies, but I've read that in some commentaries. The whole origin of life in this universe of Neon Genesis Evangelion starts with these seeds, these little seeds that are planted and then grow. And so it's this same idea, like God planted a seed, but then angels, humans, we have our own personal freedom. And so we can act and choose. And this is, we're not just victims. We're not pre-programmed. We can write our own story in a certain way. That is what Shinji learns. And I think they just ran out of time and budget to tell that same story about all the other characters. But definitely with Asuka and some of the others, I hope it will be developed a bit more in the movies. I wouldn't be surprised. But it doesn't really matter because Shinji, as the main character, I think, also embodies the stories of all the others, because in a certain way, they're all dealing with the same struggles. And so it's open-ended and it's quite enigmatic, the ending. And maybe in the movies, they will show us a little bit more. But that's what I like. That's what I keep thinking about these last two episodes. I'm thinking, whoa, this is so amazing. I can rewatch this over and over again, especially because what I explained earlier on, these are not questions that you resolve once and for all. These are struggles that you will have to go through multiple times during your life. And every time, hopefully, through these battles, you will get a little bit wiser and stronger, just like Shinji, after all these battles, finally arrives at this insight, who he wants to be, who he is supposed to be. And that, I think, makes this whole series almost a metaphor of human life. This is why, in conclusion, I believe this series is so long-lasting and has had such an impact on the people that have seen it. I totally get it, why people sometimes will say, it's not for me, it's too complicated, too convoluted, too philosophical maybe. For me, that is the reason that I watch this. And I have to be very thankful for the person who invited me to go check this out, because for me it opened a door to so many other series. So I'm currently reading Berserk. I definitely want to do a series about that as well. I've started to watch JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Death Note, and even some more, you know, kind of run of the mill anime series that are more for, I don't know, a general public. But it's so wonderful. There's so much diversity in the anime world, and there's so many amazing stories. And what strikes me that is in a lot of these anime series, what I thought was just superficial, you know, storytelling for kids and teenagers, there's actually a lot of depth, a lot of you know, in a lot of these stories, it's about ultimately about it, internal struggle, and it reflects what's going on in our society and the way that we treat each other and the way that families have evolved, and also the kind of the problems that families face or children face. I'm hooked. And there is so much more that I really want to share with you. So this is definitely not going to be the last story secrets about Neon Genesis Evangelion. I will do some more once I've seen the movies, and maybe I will do even like a rewatch. Just let me know also what you'd like me to do. And I will also do some episodes about other genres, maybe other anime series. I definitely want to do a number of episodes on the religious and philosophical themes of Star Wars, because there's a lot there too. But I hope for now that you enjoyed this, and thank you so much for the privilege of your time, for listening, and I'm looking forward to your feedback. See you next time. I'm Father Roderick. Take care.